Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast and Radio MD, iHeart, or wherever you download us from. Thank you for doing that. We, as usual, are brought to you by Life's First Naturals, the makers of Truebiotics, Bovine Colostrum, and Dye Rescue. They're going to change the name of Dye Rescue since it has so much value for the GLP-1 drugs in preventing both diarrhea, constipation, and nausea when you increase dosage, or even if you don't increase dosage. So they'll be changing that name, I've been told, but in the meantime, LifesFirstNaturals.com is their website where you can find the randomized double-blind control trials on the value of both bovine colostrum and Truebiotics when you take them routinely. And our guest is a routinely great guest. Mary Beth Albright is a food, maven of all kinds. And in fact, I think the one thing that you've got to admire is that she somehow tasted 2,000 different dishes over a three-day period as the judge of the Outstanding New Product Awards. But that isn't what this book is about. And by the way, you can find out more about her and her books by going to MaryBethAlbright.com. This book is about how you can use food to help you flourish, that is, to get a mental state that is incredibly beneficial. The other sponsor, of course, is Longevity Playbook. You can go to their website, longevityplaybook.com, and sign up for the free newsletter. So, Mary Beth, let's go to the beginning. How did you get involved in food? You started as a lawyer, is that as how I understand it?
I actually started working for C. Everett Koop, who was Surgeon General in the 1980s. A lot of people don't talk about him anymore, which is sort of surprising to me.
Well, he's the one who got smoking to the forefront and got it out of our society to a great degree.
Yeah, people used to stop him, flight attendants, and thank him for getting smoking off of airplanes because they could never get the smell out of their clothing. If you're old enough to remember smoking on airplanes, my gosh. But yeah, I used to work for Dr. Koop, worked for him for years. He was my mentor. And when I was working for him, I got really interested in population health and in food. From there, I went to law school. I went to Georgetown Law School and studied food and food law, which that's a whole different conversation because that's a really interesting, fascinating field.
You just wanted to go to the most expensive law school in the country.
Right. The most expensive law school in the country and then not use my degree. That was terrific. Although I do feel like I use my degree every day. But I went to work at the Surgeon General's office, the one who was in office at the time. And when I was sitting in my office one day, a journal article passed my desk. And this was 2005, 2006. And the journal article was about how omega-3 fatty acids, the things that we find very often in marine life, you think about it associated with fish, reduced aggression symptoms in men. And that was the first time that I had ever seen in a journal article. It was also written by somebody from the United States Public Health Service. It was the first time that I had seen the association between food and emotional well-being, food and mental health, food and relationships in a way that wasn't complementary and alternative medicine. Because at the time, complementary and alternative medicine, we all, you know, everybody loved it. Like, oh, use it as whatever you want, but it's not the front line, right? It's not the frontline treatment. So the first time that I saw this, it really whetted my appetite for how does food affect emotional well-being and how does emotional well-being affect our food choices? From there, I went to write for National Geographic and I wrote about this and then off to the Washington Post. And then a couple decades later, after I read that first article, the science really got to a tipping point and the book was a no-brainer, I'd say.
So no-brainer is a pun, so to speak. what are we doing here? This is, I forgot to remind people, this is 1222B of You, the Owner's Manual podcast. The Bs are always wonderful guests like Mary Beth Albright. And again, you can find out more about her at MaryBethAlbright.com. albright.com. The book is Eat and Flourish, How Food Supports Emotional Well-Being, and it's published by Countryman Press, which is an imprint of W.W. Norton and Company. So, Mary Beth, the omega-3s are clearly important in brain functioning, and one can think of it, even if you just think of the structure, and they're one of the omega-3s is DHA, and 50% of the brain fat is DHA, 60%. You want to be a fathead, so 60% of your brain is fat, and 50% of that is the omega-3 DHA. Tell us about the newer science relating. You have a wonderful chapter on microbiome and its importance. So I've always thought, geez, when I eat food, it's really the bacteria that get the first shot at all my food, and I'm really eating the bacterial waste.
Oh, so gosh, yes.
Make it better for me, will you?
Absolutely. Well, you know, people don't think about how the non-human genes living inside of you affect your human genes expression. And I think this goes along with this sort of like turn of the century. I love talking about the turn of the century when it's like the turn of the 21st century. Around the turn of the century, when we declared the human genome mapped, which of course, you know, that's debatable, but when that was declared mapped, people really started going from looking at the fixed part of the human genome to the why certain parts of our DNA express themselves and why they don't. We get into the subjects of epigenetics, which is something that I'm looking at for my next book. But for this book, a lot of it is about those genes inside of you. So the gut microbiome is the collection of trillions of little organisms, microscopic organisms, hence the name, living inside of you. And the food that you eat, it's like they're a factory that turn the food that you eat into things that your body can use. And how the quality of what gets produced depends on the quality of what you put into it, of what you feed the microbes. What you put into it is food. I mean, what you put into it is fiber.
It's also the genetics of the microbe, as you say.
Absolutely. And the microbiome, you know, I'm talking as if we know everything about the microbiome. We haven't even scratched the surface of the microbiome. And part of it is, part of the book is about how I got my microbiome tested. And you can't really tell a lot through microbiome testing right now, because you can't even identify a lot of the bacteria, the fungi, the viruses that live inside of you, because the gut is such a rich ecosystem. And it's hard to grow these bacteria outside of the human gut. And so we're not even sure what it is. We're not even sure what's in there. But we do know that it sincerely affects our emotional well-being and so many other things about us. And that idea that your quality of diet is a risk factor for depression, for anxiety, for other kinds of mental health issues that factor into emotional well-being is really brand new science that we have, that's peer-reviewed science.
Some of the data, so when you feed, there are a bunch of things I love about the microbiome, so I'm going to stay on that for a few seconds, one of which is the discovery that by eating something with carnitine and saturated fat, carnitine alone doesn't do it, saturated fat alone doesn't do it, but eating the two together causes the production of an inflammatory protein called trimethylamine, which is really quite inflammatory to the body, as well as leading to, I don't know if it leads to depression, but it leads to dementia. What we've learned is that if you eat it twice a week, that is enough carnitine with saturated fat, you change which of the genes of the bacteria are on to produce that protein. And so the point you make that we're changing the way the genes of the microbiome of our bacteria function, and they change how we function, they change how our brains function, is key. So if I'm going to be happy, what's the best food I can have?
Well, I try to get away from listicles, right? Of just like, eat your leafy greens, eat fruits and vegetables, because in a lot of ways, the science is cutting edge. The advice is age old. It is leafy green. It is fruits, vegetables, fiber, because what your microbes eat is fiber. And if you're not giving them enough fiber, they're going to starve. And there's a lot of hypothesis about how leaky gut syndrome, one of the risk factors is having not enough fiber in your diet. So the microbes need to start eating the inside of your stomach lining and your intestine lining because they're not getting enough fiber through your food. And so I think to step back and look at the 25,000 years, that's a conservative estimate, of the human brain and how we've eaten during that period of time. When you go from the beginnings of hunting and then you get to hunting and gathering and then you go to agriculture, when you look at the past 100 years of our food system, how it's changed so much, and 100 years is sort of in American cities, that's when the sort of industrialization of food started. It's a lot less around the world in other countries, in developing countries. But the change in how we eat and what we put inside of our bodies is so drastic. And we really don't know all the ways that it affects us yet. But we do see in the past 20 years of increasing science that diet is a risk factor for all kinds of emotional well-being issues. And so there's that portion of it. And in the book is divided into four sections. One is about the gut microbiome. One is about the nutrients that food gives you. So vitamins, minerals, that kind of thing. Another is about inflammation, because as you well know, as a doctor, inflammation anywhere in the body can pass through the blood-brain barrier and wreak havoc in your brain. And then the last one is pleasure. And I know you are a cook, so getting to the pleasure of food. And I do come from this. I am a food writer and a science writer. And so I come from this from a place of understanding the pleasure that is critical that comes from food and that we need to use that as much as possible as part of our emotional well-being.
One of the things that I was struck by is the change in the ratio of potassium to sodium that's occurred over the last, I guess, 150 years. We've gone from a very high ratio of potassium to sodium to now under one. And we talked about that in the 1222A segment, which is the latest medical news of the week and what it means to you. We know it affects blood vessel stiffness. We know it affects a number of things in our cardiometabolic system. I don't know that I've seen anything on its mental effects. Has that had a mental effect on us, or is it just that we're missing the potassium-containing foods are largely fruits and vegetables?
There is so much food research to be done. The problem, it's devilishly difficult to do food research and nutrition research because short of putting a webcam on someone's head, you don't know what they really eat. And if you go back to, for non-scientists, you go back to high school science, the scientific method, everything matters. And so you might do a study about somebody eating more sodium than potassium, but it's all going to be self-reported. Or in very, very rare cases, they'll have people, there was an NIH study over the course of 4 weeks where they actually had people live in. They did it was a processed, ultra-processed food study. And, you know, it's incredibly expensive and you can't get a lot of people to live at NIH for a month, you know, and isolate themselves from their normal lives. And so your point is part of a larger one that we don't know. And there's so much research to be done about this thing that every single person does every single day, many times a day. But, you know, the human body is an ecosystem. I don't need to tell you this. You're one of the first people who taught me that, Dr. Roizen. It was, you know, the human body is an ecosystem and it's a collection. It's not just a container for parts. They all interact with each other. And one thing that you do can change everything, and particularly with emotional well-being. And so, yeah, there's a lot more research to be done. We don't know why these things happen, but we do know that they happen. And that's why it's so difficult to establish causation in nutrition science, because of the problems that I just brought up. I mean, you go back to tobacco research too, like difficult to establish causation because what are all the things that could cause cancer in a human? I mean, it goes back decades and decades. So we need more research. I hate to use that line, but we do need more food research. I'm here to advocate for it.
So now let me, what have I missed asking you about? We're running out of time. I want to get one more question in about the 2000 food judge. But before you do that, one more point about the book that if I missed anything, please, I know I missed a lot, so don't.
No, of course, of course. I would say culturally, I think it's really important to understand the science because we've come into an age only in the past couple of years that weight and self-discipline are starting to become separated. And that's because of the new medications that are available and the new information that we have that, boy, eating and obesity and all these things are not things that we know a whole lot about. And we're learning a lot about them. And so what I try to do in this book is separate sort of diet culture, which is the look great, feel great, that kind of thing, from the actual science. And the science is significant. And, you know, everybody can use this tool to eat better and feel better.
Great. And I should say that you can find out more, again, marybethalbright.com. The book is Eat and Flourish, How Food Supports Emotional Well-Being. Now, at 2,000 samples in a three-day period, it couldn't have been emotionally well-being for you. How much of each were you able to eat, and did you? How did you get rid of them, so to speak?
The first thing I'll tell you is that both nights after you, because it's eight judges in a room, and afterwards they have a big dinner for you, you know, like a socialization like they do at any kind of conference or judging or, you know, and I was just sitting there like, and I went because, you know, you want to be social and you don't want to be a jerk, but the barbecue sauces were the hardest part. Because sitting there and drinking barbecue sauce to determine which barbecue sauce is the best barbecue sauce out of little cups is daunting. But the life of a food writer, people find it very interesting and, you know, want to talk to you about where you go to eat and stuff like that. But a lot of it is just living in a lab. Like everything you eat is something to experiment. Everything that you learn about has something to do with food. I'm going to an event at the White House tomorrow night for Italian Americans. And that event is going to have food there. And that food is going to inform the event. And so I just think that the more people think about food, the cultural aspects, in addition to the scientific aspects, the more that we can appreciate this incredible resource that we have to increase our emotional well-being.
I want to thank you for writing the book, Eat and Flourish. It's important for our emotional well-being to understand how food is medicine and interacts with us. So thank you for this. We, of course, are sponsored by Life's First Naturals. Go to their website, lifesfirstnaturals.com. See the randomized double-blind controlled trials for both TruBiotics and bovine colostrum, as well as learn about DiRescue. They're going to change the name, but DiRescue is important if you're on one of the GLP-1s, such as semaglutide or tirzepatide, otherwise known as Ozempic or Wegovy, Mounjaro or Zepbound. Because when you change doses, you often have symptoms, and DiRescue, at least in the blogosphere, seems to prevent those side effects substantially. And, of course, the other is longevityplaybook.com. Sign up for the free newsletter at longevityplaybook.com, and soon the AI nurse who will be able to coach you on not only food, but also exercise, stress management, and a whole bunch of other things that can lead to you living younger, longer. Thanks again, Mary Beth. MaryBethAlbright.com has been our guest, and she is the author of Eat and Flourish. Thanks very much, but especially thank you, the 50,000 of you that tune in and download us every week. Thanks very much for doing so. We'll be back next week. We hope you are too. In the meantime, go online and look at and get Eat and Flourish. Thanks again.